Over $500 million worth of cryptocurrency is stolen, jackpotting hits the states, and net neutrality is still in the news, but why? All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings, I am Shannon Morris, and this is ThreatWire for January 30th, 2018, your summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. Our Patreon is over at patreon.com/threatwire, and that is always the best way to support the show and will help us reach our next goal. And now, on to the news. And this is the first time, I believe, that we're talking about cryptocurrency. So a ton of news has been happening on the cryptocurrency front and the digital currency exchange front. Many different exchanges have been dealing with hacks and theft of wallets. Most recently, two different stories surfaced last week regarding potential thefts of millions of dollars worth of cryptocurrencies. Keep in mind, cryptocurrencies are not currently FDIC insured, but your wallet may be protected in some way by your chosen exchange. So last week on Tuesday, three men armed with handguns entered the Canadian Bitcoin Exchange office in Ottawa, Canada, in an attempt to coerce employees into making transactions on their behalf. These exchanges offer a simple way for buyers and sellers to make transactions for a small price, but they also usually keep some coin on reserve. Chances are this is what the men were interested in. Police arrested one 19-year-old involved in the attempted robbery and are searching for two others. Now, while their attempt was unsuccessful, another heist made off with over 500 million USD worth of coins. In Japan, the cryptocurrency exchange called CoinCheck is shutting down and halting trading and withdrawals and recommends users refrain from making deposits to their accounts. Now, eventually, they halted deposits as well. CoinCheck announced during a press conference at the Tokyo Stock Exchange that this is because over 500 million XEM, which is the NEM Foundation-created cryptocurrency, were stolen from their exchange on Friday, and police were seen on Friday at CoinCheck's offices in Japan. According to the NEM Foundation president, NEM's multi-signature smart contract was not implemented by CoinCheck and that they, as in CoinCheck, had pretty lax security measures. Now, while a hack was not mentioned on the CoinCheck public releases, other users do suspect it due to CoinCheck's use of the term unauthorized access. Yeah, that kind of does sound like a hack. This is the largest cryptocurrency theft in history, with the second largest being another Japanese exchange, Mt. Gox, back in 2014. Now, Mt. Gox collapsed soon after they announced the theft, which could be a sign of what may happen to CoinCheck as well. CoinCheck announced 2 days ago that they will reimburse about 46.3 billion yen, which is 530 million USD, to the 260,000 customers who lost their funds in the theft. Alongside all of this news of theft is another piece of cryptocurrency news in which YouTube ads are serving up CPU-draining code linked to mining. The code runs whenever a visitor went to pages on YouTube.com in a browser, where it would drain CPU and electricity to mine cryptocurrency, and you guessed it, it's obviously linked to CoinHive, the mining service that shares code which allows mining off of other people's computers. Trend Micro researchers found a spike 3 times higher than normal mining detections in antivirus, and they noticed that the ad was abusing Google's DoubleClick platform with JavaScript to mine Monero. Now, the ads have since been removed from YouTube. Jackpotting is a crime in which thieves steal money from ATMs by installing malicious software that makes the ATM spew tons and tons of bills over a short period of time. A thief requires physical access to the machine to either use electronics and or malware to control the ATM. Now, this is totally not new. Jackpotting was shown off at Black Hat, along with being seen across Europe and Asia in the real actual world. There are real life ATMs being hacked using jackpotting. But jackpotting has now hit the states, with the United States Secret Service sending notifications to financial institutions to be on the lookout for this kind of crime. ATM makers Diebold Nixdorf and NCR also notified customers about the potential threat. Diebold reported an out-of-production model of its ATM in Mexico was targeted and also explained that, quote, We were informed by U.S. authorities about potential jackpotting attacks moving from Mexico to the United States within the next days. Standalone ATMs like one seen in the neighborhood corner stores or bars or pharmacies are targeted in these kind of attacks, with front-load Optiva ATMs with advanced function dispensers being the main machines targeted. Now, Krebs on Security's anonymous source claims that these ATM thieves are using PLOTUS-D malware, which first came to light in 2013. With PLOTUS-D, a thief dresses as a technician, for example, and they plug in a laptop and a mobile device into the ATM to gain control physically. Once in control, the machine dispenses about 40 bills every 23 seconds until the machine runs completely dry, so there's no money left in the thing. According to FireEye security researchers, the malware could be slightly changed to work with 40 different ATM vendors. Windows XP ATMs, which surprisingly a lot of ATMs run on Windows XP still, are most vulnerable. Diebold Nixdorf recommends limiting physical access to ATMs by using appropriate locking mechanisms and controlling access, plus adding two-factor authentication. They also suggest updating security firmware. During this month's ShmooCon conference in Washington, D.C., which just so happens to be one of Hack 5's favorite conferences to attend, Leah Figueroa, a data engineer at GravWell, gave a talk about her analysis of the public comments on the FCC database received from millions of people. Or were they bots? She and her team identified comments made by real people and comments made by bots. But haven't we heard this story before? Yes, yes we have, but not as detailed as what she has done. Her analysis used data matching human behavior, timestamps, and contact email oddities. So she found hundreds of thousands were submitted with the same timestamp, submitted using a contact email written in all caps, which is likely from a database. 1 million used email addresses at Pornhub.com, and the bots continually opted out of email verification, which would have bounced anyway. Thousands used fake email addresses like example@example.com, and they used misconfigured formatting, such as leaving the state of residency as squiggly brackets state in all caps with another squiggly bracket. Obviously, that's from a database as well. So she found that 17.4% were real and unique. The majority of the 17.4% of unique comments supported net neutrality, while the majority of bot comments were against it. In other net neutrality news, because yes, this story does continue, the FCC set up the Broadband Deployment Advisory Committee, or BDAC for short, last year to work with cities and towns on broadband development. And according to Major Sam Licardo of San Jose, California, one of the members of the board, the BDAC is favoring private industry over municipalities. He resigned, giving examples of the problems he had seen within the committee. FCC Commissioner Mignon Clyburn echoed his comments and complaints on the BDAC, while Ajit Pai stated to Ars Technica that he was continuing to work with the BDAC to remove barriers to deployment and extend opportunities. The BDAC's model state code allows ISPs to pay low taxpayer-subsidized rates and get access rights equal to utilities without utility regulation, but also does not include any wording in favor of Americans with limited broadband access. It favoritizes private industry ISPs over municipalities, even though Harvard University found during a study that city-owned broadband offers lower and transparent prices. Now, while this is occurring in the FCC, two U.S. states have passed executive orders maintaining net neutrality principles. New York and Montana are leading this enforcement, which sidesteps the boundaries made by the FCC's recent vote against allowing states to have their own net neutrality laws. The state orders do not require ISPs to follow the neutral principles. Instead, they require state agencies to only do business with ISPs that follow those principles. So any ISP that blocks, throttles, or prioritizes content, forcing users to pay higher rates for access, will be completely disqualified. We'll report if any more states sign similar orders. Thank you again to all of the fine people out there who contribute to patreon.com/threatwire. You know who you are. You are the reason that we can keep on bringing you news every single week. We are on the way to our next goal, which allows me to upgrade some of our equipment. And oh, how wonderful it would be to buy a new GPU. for my editing machine, but they are currently like 3 times the price, and they're currently sold out everywhere. It is so sad. I wish I could do that for my editing machine, but in the meantime, I can't. But we will also open up a live video Q&A just for patrons each and every month, and eventually, I'm gonna upgrade that editing rig. If you are already a patron, you get access to an audio RSS feed, first looks at show topics, discussions just for patrons, and a lot more, and any little bit helps us grow the show. And hey, check out these fur babies. They're super cute and sent in by some of our Patreon supporters, so thank you very much. Check out the perk levels on Patreon, and thanks again for helping us keep this show completely independent, and if you can't donate, hit that little subscribe button and comment below if you liked it. With that, I am Shannon Morse, and I will see you on the internet.